Alex Gibney's 2007 film, Taxi to the Dark Side, won the Academy Award for Best Documentary Feature. His other notable documentaries include Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room, and We Steal Secrets, The Story of WikiLeaks. In 2009, Mr. Gibney set out to follow the champion cyclist Lance Armstrong as he attempted a comeback to competitive cycling and an eighth victory in the Tour de France. But then the scandal over Armstrong's use of performance-enhancing drugs peaked, and the film's title was changed to The Armstrong Lie. It opened in October, is in general release around the United States. I'm very pleased that it brings Alex Gibney back to our show today. Hi.
Hello, good to be here.
And how can people find out where it's in release?
Armstronglie.com, and it'll have a list of theaters where it's currently playing.
Don't you have a new film called Finding Fela about the famous Nigerian musician, political activist Fela Kuti?
Indeed. It'll be at the Sundance Film Festival. It'll premiere there.
Uh-huh. And then
it's there to be sold. So presumably then a distributor will pick it up and we'll see.
Well, I'm wondering, let's get back to Lance Armstrong. Has he finally come completely clean about his doping history?
No. I think he's saving some stuff, but I'm not sure it's going to do him any good.
Saving it for what, a memoir?
Well, it may be. He has reached out to some people, and other people have reached out to him to tell the final all-in story. You know, and I think he's been hinting at the idea that he's going to expose the people around him that enabled him to do what he did.
Well, didn't he have the opportunity to do that when you were filming him?
He did.
You
and he did that to some extent. I think you can see he was kind of parsing it, you know, that he wasn't giving me the full story. Also, I think in fairness to him, he's caught between two courts. He's caught between the court of law, because there are a lot of very heavy-duty lawsuits aimed directly at him, and the court of public opinion. And the more he tells all to satisfy the court of public opinion, the more trouble he gets in legal terms.
You started working on this film in 2009 before the doping scandal peaked. There had been reports of doping for years. What changed in 2009?
Well, I thought that this might be his redemption story. In other words, that he was going to go back, race clean, and then put to doubts, you know, all the questions about the past. See, I could do it dirty or I could do it clean. That was kind of my perspective. And to be honest, and it's one of the things I explore in the film, because it's also a film about belief every bit as much as it is about lying, that, you know, I bought that idea. I bought that story, and I fell into it hook, line, and sinker.
It's also about recovery from cancer.
Right. Well, look, that was the beautiful lie that everybody wanted to believe in. And in part because Lance made that lie so big. He didn't just say, you know, he didn't just have his cancer foundation, Live Strong, on the one hand, and then say to people who asked him, did you dope? He said, I've never tested positive, which might have been true. He always implicated the cancer survivors. He always said, look, how dare you say that I, as a cancer survivor, would ever use performance-enhancing drugs? Well, that has a very corrosive effect over time, because it makes a lot of people believe very strongly in his innocence. And so when he finally said that actually I was doping, they were shattered.
Well, in 2004, David Walsh and Pierre Ballester published L.A. Confidential, L.A. standing for Lance Armstrong, not Los Angeles. And they pretty much laid the whole thing out. How did you imagine addressing the doping issue when you started making the film?
Well, I did. You know, I had a brief. You know, I was brought onto this project with the idea being Frank Marshall, a Hollywood producer, and Matt Tolmach, who was then a key exec at Sony, had been tracking the Armstrong story for a while as a fiction film. When Lance decided to come back, they thought, well, this would be great to do as a documentary. So I was going to follow him through that year. But I made it clear at the beginning that, you know, we had to address in some way, shape, or form these allegations from the past. So I did address them. I interviewed Walsh, for example, and I interviewed a number of other people who would make claims. The problem was nobody had any concrete proof. He had never tested positive.
And that book came out in France, and the assumption was, I guess, that the French felt that an American winning the Tour de France was kind of an affront to them.
I think that's right.
It never got published anywhere else.
Well, in part, I think, because of Lance's threats. That is to say, he sued the Times of London and also took on Ballester in France in a legal action. And I think that scared American publishers, though Walsh later published a kind of redone version of that in a thing called From Lance to Landis, a History of Doping. So it's fair to say that the allegations were certainly out there. There was a good bit of smoke. Nobody could – there was no fire, but there was a lot of smoke for people who were watching. And I think one of the most amazing things about this story is how this lie hid in plain sight.
Well, a couple of people mentioned Omerta, Code of Silence. Was silence on doping really enforced, or is that too strong a way of putting it?
It was enforced in a sense, and we show one example in the film where an Italian cyclist named Simeoni had come forward and basically said that Lance's key doctor, this Dr. Michele Ferrari, had prescribed EPO, performance-enhancing drug, for him, Simeoni. And Armstrong was furious at this. And so in the midst of a race in the Tour de France, he rode down Simeoni in a very public fashion, as if to say to the rest of the peloton, this is what happens if you speak out. And other riders said actually that was much appreciated in the peloton because they had this open secret, which was that everybody was doping.
So if everybody was doping, why does it matter that Lance Armstrong doped? Doesn't that level the playing field in a way?
It's not quite a level playing field, but it is true that there is this element of the culture of doping. So you have to give Lance that and say there were a lot of people who were doping at the time. The problem for Lance is twofold. One is he had an advantage that nobody else had, which was the power of his lie, and he abused that power because his story was so good. It was making so much money for so many people, for the sponsors, for the people who ran the tour, that a lot of officials ended up intervening on his behalf and finding ways to prevent people from finding out what he was doing.
Even though they knew that he was doping.
Yes. It's a fairly well-established record that what the tour organizers were doing, in fact, was to lay out a system of discovery, which would basically say, dope, but don't dope too much. In other words, if you're red blood cell level exceeds 50%, then we're going to come after you. And they would warn the cyclists if they were getting too close to that mark.
And then some people were caught, but Lance always kept it below 50%.
He always kept it below 50%, but also it's not firmly established, but reasonably well established that going back even to 1999, they were giving Lance extra special treatment.
My guest is Alex Gibney, whose film The Armstrong Lie is in theaters around the country. You put this aside for a while, didn't you, and then returned to it?
Yes. It started out as Breaking Away, and it ended up as Breaking Bad. And I think, you know, at some point we had once it became much more firmly established that it was likely that Lance Armstrong had doped and doped a lot— and that was because of the testimony of some of his ex-teammates, some coming on 60 Minutes. There was suddenly a federal investigation. We realized that there was a certain naivete to the original film.
And you have wondered why so many people refused to believe that Lance had ever doped. We can understand why his fans supported him. But how did journalists and agencies like the International Cycling Union, the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, act other than to give him warnings? You have a clip with Barbara Walters asking of all the allegations, aren't you sick of it? She sounds like she's on his side.
Well, everybody was. And I think that's one of the things that the Armstrong lie talks about, is how a lie like this goes undiscovered, even though it's hiding in plain sight, because so many people wanted that inspirational story that they didn't want to believe the truth.
Well, Greg LeMond, who was one of the few bicyclists well known to Americans before Lance Armstrong, didn't he pay a crew to tail Armstrong's comeback? Why was he so invested in it?
It's a good question. But he became furious over time, perhaps because he felt that, you know, Armstrong it was unfair in some way that Armstrong would be able to dope and win, and LeMond, according to him, was clean and he won, and so there has to be a difference. But yeah, it's true. I mean, actually, Greg LeMond's crew was filming me and my crew, because we were, as they said at the time to my camera person, we're filming you because we're the anti-Gibney crew.
Armstrong made over $100 million. Nike and others had huge contracts with him. What role did money play in suppressing allegations about doping? And was he able to keep all the money?
So far, though he's paying an awful lot of money out in legal fees and settlements of legal cases. And the Department of Justice has an action against him, a QI-TAM lawsuit, a so-called whistleblower lawsuit involving Floyd Landis, an ex-teammate. And if Lance loses that, it would cost him over $100 million.
Did you feel a certain sympathy for him? You made the film Client 9 about Elliot Spitzer, and that was kind of sympathetic to his situation.
Look, I think any time you spend a lot of time with somebody, you see their humanity. And I think Lance Armstrong was no exception. So, there's a certain sympathy. But at the same time, you can look at some of what he did and the way he abused his power and went after people who were trying to tell the truth. That, I think, was more than problematic. It was just dead wrong.
Like the bicyclist Frankie Andreu and his wife Betsy, who said they thought you were doing a puff piece.
They did, and they were initially very reluctant to participate, though Frankie did participate in the first film. It's interesting, he wasn't willing to go as far as to say outright what he actually knew at the time, which was that Lance had doped.
Well, he'd been on the team.
He had been.
You have a clip of Armstrong's aide, Stephanie McElvain, leaving a really vicious message on Betty Andreu's answering machine. Did she know that Armstrong was lying?
It's extremely likely because she had discussed the issue with Betsy Andreu, and Betsy reports that Stephanie says, yes, I knew he was lying. But under oath, she claims that actually she didn't say that. So there's some question as to whether or not Armstrong is protecting her, and that she reached out rather viciously to Betsy Andreu because she felt that her position had been compromised.
The film has a number of different interviews with people like Barbara Walters. Oprah had a very famous one, yours. Did he change his story each time?
Slowly but surely, more came out. And I think one of the amazing things about Lance Armstrong is he is the custodian of his own myth. And so he would constantly change his story depending on how conditions were at the time and what he felt was appropriate. It was interesting. You know, I asked him when he called me prior to Oprah and he said he was thinking of coming clean. I said, well, you know, why don't you just keep attacking people and defending yourself the way you always have? I mean, it was just a question of curiosity. He said, because the story is no longer believable. So you can see he was looking at his own story and measuring its worth and then adjusting it accordingly.
Which you say he is still doing.
He is still doing that. And he wants back in, and he's trying to figure out a way to get back in. And I think one of his strategies is to parse out the information that he still has, which I do think would be valuable.
Back in what way? He can't want to race again.
He does. He wants
How
to
old
compete.
Is he?
Well, he's over 40, but it's not that he wants to race in the Tour de France. He wants to do Ironman competitions or any, you know, his whole being is about competing, and so that's been taken from him.
What has happened to the people who supported his doping, like the U.S. team manager, Johan Bruniel, or the doctor and trainer, Michelle Ferrari, or that aide, Stephanie McElvain? Have their reputations been ruined?
Well, Michele Ferrari has been banned from cycling and stop. Johan Bruniel is going through a procedure with the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, a fact-finding procedure. And as soon as that's done, then we'll see what happens with him.
Do you think that your film has damaged his cause?
Whose?
Lance Armstrong's.
His cancer cause?
Well, everything. His career is kind of really ruined, isn't it? Or his reputation is ruined?
I think his reputation was already ruined before we completed this film. In a way, what this film intended to do was to show the anatomy of a lie. Because one of the things that's curious about this lie is that it hid in plain sight for so long. And I think, you know, I put myself in the film in a way that I almost never do, to reflect on my own experience having gone through this, as a way of saying, look, it's natural to want to believe in the beautiful lie more than the ugly truth. I was one of those people who did it. It's particularly natural in sports where you want to root for people. But then when you're rooting for a cancer survivor, it's even more intense.
Just one thing more about the logistics of making a film like this. We find ourselves riding in the Tour de France and
Indeed.
Other races. You mounted cameras on people?
On the domestiques, the people who teammates of Lance Armstrong. And we got footage of the Tour de France that nobody's ever gotten before.
The Armstrong Lie is in theaters around the country. You can find out where by going to armstronglie.com. My great thanks to Alex Gibney for being on our show today.
Thank you so
much.
It's
always a pleasure to talk with you.
Always a pleasure.